Hey, it's King Kaz here from Sports Odds and Ends, the show for the fly-by-night sports fans. So due to the fact that COVID-19 is still happening around the world, sports can't happen at the current moment. So me and the boys here at Sports Odds and Ends are going to take some time to do a few special episodes that you're going to hear from us. We're going to be talking about esports and competitive gaming. I'm going to be covering Counter-Strike and going into depth with DJM, and JVZ will be doing the same with League of Legends and the LCS. We'll talk about why we are fans of these esports, how to watch these esports, and what it is to be a fan of these esports. And those are just a few things, as well as some of the strategies that go into the game and our understanding of the game as fans. So look out for that. Those are going to be episodes that are coming up. We're also going to have a few other special episodes coming down the pipeline, so be sure to check out the website sportsoddsandends.com, as well as follow us all on Twitter. DJM is Just Call Me DJM. I am King Kaz, and JVZ is JVZ. Thank you for listening to these special episodes, and I hope you and your loved ones stay safe.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sports Odds and Ends. This is another special edition episode where we talk about yet another esport that we all enjoy. And this week, we are going to be talking about fighting games. And DJM is going to be our expert for this episode. So far, we've done two team games, League of Legends and Counter-Strike GO. So now we're moving into more of an individual sport, so this will be a nice change of pace. So DJM, how are you doing?
Hey, what's up, guys?
And Kaz is here as well. Kaz, how are you doing?
Hey, what's up?
All right, let's get started. DJM, what initially got you into fighting games in general?
Oh, I think it's really been a part of my gaming experience for as long as I can remember. I think it was definitely like a lot of kids from that era and the era that I grew up in. It was almost certainly either Mortal Kombat or Street Fighter. And in my case, it was Mortal Kombat. It was the first Mortal Kombat game, Mortal Monday, as it was called, back when Mortal Kombat moved from the arcades to the video game consoles of the time, the Sega Genesis and the Super Nintendo. And we'll probably bring up a couple of times just how significant the arcade scene was to the fighting game genre over the years. But really, it was just that idea of being able to play these games in your home that was really, really cool. And also, I was fortunate enough over time to get a Sega Genesis 6-button controller, because in those days, fighting games were built on the original Street Fighter 6-button scale, and that really was just the way to play them back then if you were fortunate enough to have a 6-button controller. And even now, I think Mortal Kombat is still a leader in the genre in terms of moving it forward, in terms of gameplay, in terms of accessibility, in terms of breaking through with the mainstream. So a lot of it really started with Mortal Kombat. More than just playing the games, it was playing the games with other people. It was the competitive scene. It was going to arcades and watching people play. I think that's one of the big things about fighting games that are different from other esport competitive games is that it is an individual competition. It is in many ways, I was thinking about this earlier, in that in the tournament scene, it's probably very similar to golf in a lot of ways, in that larger tournaments are open invitational tournaments where everyone can come in, to where you'll see larger regional tournaments or national or global tournaments, and you'll see people entering into certain games by the thousands. And I think that's different from a lot of the major esports in that regard, in that it is something that is individual. And to a certain degree, it's also like combat sports. It's like MMA, it's like K1, where it is individuals who train and practice and compete one-on-one. And I think that that's something that's always appealed to me the most. It's that one-on-one, man-to-man, toe-to-toe vibe that comes with this style of competition, where it's just you and me. If I win, I went through my hard work, my training, and my merit. If I lost, it's on me. No excuses. I don't have teammates to put it on. And I think that's a little bit good and bad for the fighting game world as well, in that a lot of it is very individualistic.
So, considering that it's one-on-one and it's kind of skill versus skill, that kind of discussion always brings me to the old Smash Brothers joke of, like, you know, Fox only, Final Destination, you know, just like, okay, if you really want to test skill, like, then just make this map as boring as possible, and make these characters as bland as possible, and just go one-on-one with skill. So that lends me to believe that, like, a lot of the games, like, the characters matter, because each of those characters have different abilities. The maps matter a little bit, and so if that's the case, like, I guess the question I'm getting at is how much of an effect do those things have, and how do, in the competitive scene, how do they try to keep that balanced?
In the modern games, stages definitely play a factor. There are times where you can use stage accessories in your combat. There are stage moments where you can move from one to another. Specifically in Tekken, if you're executing a combo, it can break the stage and move to another floor. Multiple environments is something that's become a big part of Tekken. It started with Mortal Kombat, actually, but it's something that can be played to an advantage with the specific player. Also, if you have a infinite stage in some games, where that can be mitigated, where certain things like wall bounces and wall carries, where players can bounce off the wall, and you can execute combos that way, those can be mitigated. Those are very situational, and a lot of times it can be whichever player has the advantage, whether someone has a 2-1 lead in a match, they can pick a stage or pick a character, and those things can be ways you can adjust to fit your advantage, or you have to find a way to come out of a disadvantage to where you get to choose the stage the next round. Also, in the case of characters, matchups can definitely be a thing. I'm sure we've all seen now tier lists go viral for various reasons. I think that tier lists oftentimes in a lot of games are very fluid. You'll see certain players, certain high-level players, win with certain characters, and then you'll see a certain character get played by lots of people with a really high success rate.
Does fighting games kind of see, because you mentioned the tier list, and League of Legends has this too, especially a lot more now than it used to, where people will try to put out these tier lists per patch of the game, and they're like, oh, this patch, you know, these characters are going to be the strongest, and those things are usually more targeted at the kind of fly-by-night fan to be like, hey, if you're looking for the easy online climb, play one of these because the math works out in their favor. But for professionals, and I think you alluded to this a little bit, there are people who are just kind of known for something that they play no matter what the patch, no matter what the math is.
A lot of fighting game players, especially like the long tenured veterans, are very character specific. Probably the best example of this is Daigo Umehara, the legendary Street Fighter player who has played Ryu or Evil Ryu in Super Street Fighter 4 for in excess of 20 years, he's been maybe the definitive Ryu player in all of Street Fighter history. He is an example. That doesn't happen as much as it used to, because now the game developers are constantly working on patching players, adjusting players. So that doesn't happen as much as it used to, but a lot of it is character loyalty and personal preference. And that's something that's really cool about fighting games now, and that wasn't there even as recently as, say, the PlayStation 2 or the Dreamcast era, is that game developers and the developers of these fighting games are working for the sake of making sure as many characters as possible and as many players as possible have an opportunity to win some games. And that is a cool feeling, where you really are just relying on your skill and your drive to improve and compete.
Yeah. So one of the other questions I have in kind of just trying to cross this bridge of knowledge. So when the Riot devs tend to tune the game, they tend to take a bit of data from the pro level, and then they tend to take a bit of data from the online level and try to find that median, so that it doesn't just tip one way or the other. Is that kind of the same across fighting games, or is it kind of game to game specific, since there's usually multiple popular fighting games that people tend to span?
With the exception of Capcom, I think that it's as you said. I know, for example, Bandai Namco, who developed Tekken, they definitely take a lot of feedback from the competitive scene. A lot of their community managers were in the competitive scene and still work in the competitive scene and still play competitively. So they get that feedback, as well as feedback from just the general audience, whether it's the online players or the people that specifically stick to the single-player content. I think they do, again, with the exception of Capcom, they do a pretty good job of drawing from all pieces. Like, for example, one of the characters from Tekken 7, my personal favorite, Li Xiaolan, in the first two seasons of the game, when it came out, Li was not a very good character, and I moved from him, including some of the other Li players as well. But in the most recent patch of the game, Li has been kind of reinvigorated in some ways. And some of the Li players, myself included, have picked him up again and have found him to be a bit more of an enjoyable character to play online or competitively in a competitive scene.
Okay.
Again, excluding Capcom.
Yeah.
Is there a ban system for characters? Like when somebody gets too good at one character, like you mentioned some people get known for certain characters, is there a way to just say you cannot play that character this round? Or okay, so the game has to essentially be incredibly balanced, and you mentioned that they put a lot of effort into that, but yeah, it seems like there has to be a ton of work into making the game balanced, because you cannot rely on the competitive game structure to blank out the programming mishaps that you have until the next patch comes. So how often do these patches come, and how often do players have to adjust to like a new quote-unquote meta every time one of these patches? I know it's kind of a weird question to ask when you have so many different games under the genre, but is there like a general pattern?
I feel like depending on the game, it maybe will be two or three times a year you'll see a major, major update. I think that is something that the developers do a good job of maintaining a certain level of vigilance with the balance of a game and its competitive balance. And I think that's mostly because where we are now, you're getting constant feedback. The servers can see what's happening. They can see what characters are doing well, what characters are being selected, what characters are doing well on the tournament scene, and they can hear from the players. They hear from players all over the world at all levels, and they adjust accordingly. So, 2 or 3 times a year, generally.
Okay. So let's talk a bit about the pro scene and how it plays out, because we talked about that a little bit with League. So a lot of these games tend to do some kind of online qualifier that leads into, you know, stage tournaments. Is how does fighting games work? Are they the same? Is it a little bit different?
I would say that the fighting game competitive scene has 2 very robust communities. There is the online scene, where people are playing online, and pretty much every online fighting game has its own unique ranking system. There are online tournaments, sort of like in the real world. There is their own competitive scene. Keep in mind, this was all before the COVID-19 pandemic.
Yeah.
Within the actual real-life competitive scene, it kind of goes like this. You have your, say, Kaz, for example, you live in Baltimore. You probably have a pretty solid fighting game scene in the Baltimore area, and likely within the state of Maryland. And I would say that it will go to the city, and then the regional level. Say, given you, for example, Cass, there's probably a tournament, a big tournament that covers the entire Mid-Atlantic, D.C., Maryland, Virginia, that whole part of the United States. And then you'll have, like, the larger regional tournaments, like CEO or Combo Breaker in Chicago, CEO in Florida, where... It is seen as sort of a regional tournament, but you'll see players from all over the place compete. Those are like the larger major tournaments. Again, like golf, there are smaller tournaments and then there are major tournaments. And then you have like the Combo Breakers, the CEOs, the Kumites in Tennessee, and then you'll have like the Japanese tournaments. Those are the ones that are like not, I would say, the second tier.
Okay.
And then you have, I would even say, like, CEO is probably getting to that point where it is sort of a global tournament, because you see how prominent it has become in the last few years. And tournaments like that happen in the UK. You're starting to see the Middle East starting to become more of a hotbed for the fighting game scene. Japan and Korea, of course. And, of course, last but not least, the tournament everybody knows, the Evolution Tournament that takes place in Las Vegas. The long-running, originally was just sort of a Street Fighter regional tournament, eventually grew into what I like to call the WrestleMania of fighting games. It is the global open invitational where all are welcome, all can come, and if you win Evo, you are generally regarded as the best player in the world for that year. Nowadays, every game has kind of like their own world tour point system, kind of like NASCAR.
Okay.
But generally, yeah, if you win Evo, you get the most points, and you are seen as the best player in the world. But with the world tours that every game is coming up with now, whether it's the Tekken World Tour, or the Capcom World Tour, or the Warner Brothers World Tour, those are calendar-based, and those are with each calendar year. And if you have the most points at the end of the calendar year, you win for that year, and you are that World Tour's champion. But within the tournament scene, if you win your regionals, you're pretty darn good. If you win your locals, you're okay and can probably compete at Evo and do well. And if you can make it to the top 8 of your regional, Those are usually the money positions where you actually place and earn some earnings, your top eights. If you're making top eight in your tournaments, you're a pretty good player. If you're making top eight at Evo, you are undisputed one of the best players in the world.
Okay. So we know the league has the LCS system. Counter-Strike, kind of somewhere similar, where it has a tournament system throughout the year, but for Counter-Strike, it runs in minors and then majors, which is almost kind of similar to golf as well. Is it somewhat similar in fighting games? And then for Counter-Strike, the minors and majors are kind of depicted on the prize pool amount?
Yes, the prize pool amount is definitely a factor.
Okay.
I'm never exactly sure of the amounts of the earnings.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of these tournaments, because it fluctuates a lot depending on which are sponsored and which aren't.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, that's how it goes. The size of the tournament usually indicates your earnings, as well as how many World Tour points you get, should you make a top eight.
Are these events usually very heavily sponsored, or is it mostly just the game manufacturers that that sponsor these tournaments?
At the local and regional level, and this goes back to sort of the grassroots underground arcade scene of fighting games, you can get local sponsorships. Regionally, if you get like a fairly large regional tournament, you're almost certainly, say if it's a Mortal Kombat tournament, if it's a large enough tournament where you're like doing it inside of a large building like a convention center or like a large hotel and you're filling that hotel, you'll almost certainly get the attention of Warner Brothers and they will bring in some sponsors to help with the prize pool. That is the one thing about the fighting game scene, is that the money that is put into the fighting game scene is not anywhere near the level as a lot of the other competitive games. It just isn't. But if your tournament gathers enough word of mouth and entries and popularity and buzz, it will definitely get their attention. It's very old school in that regard, and building from the ground up.
Do you think the fact that there's so many different fighting games out there, do you think that helps or hurts with that?
I think that in terms of getting people into the scene and finding a game that you like and want to play, it's good for players. For the general public, for someone that just sees a fighting game tournament and says, oh, there are five or six different games here. That's really cool. I'm not really into Street Fighter, but I'm really into Soul Calibur. Someone may not really be into Mortal Kombat that much, but they might discover that they really like Guilty Gear. That, for the individual, is really cool. I think that originally, a lot of the major game developers were saying, we really don't want our game mixing with all of these other games, Nintendo looking in your direction. But I think they came to the understanding that one of the biggest things about the fighting game competitive scene that sets it apart is the community and how community focused it really is. The fighting game community is as important as the games themselves. And a lot of these major companies are seeing how a lot of these tournaments are going, and they're saying, okay, yes, we can definitely sponsor this tournament for our game. We can definitely do that. And if the other game companies want to do that for their game, cool. It shows that everybody is a part of the community, and a lot of the major game developers are coming around on that, looking at you, Riot Games, hope you're paying attention when your game comes out, that you really can't cordon off your game from the rest of the community unless you're paying tons and tons of money.
Oh, don't worry.
Because
a bunch of money.
Because a lot of fighting game players, they play multiple games. So, yeah, if you're a fighting game player and you're really competitive and you're really high level, you're probably playing more than one game. So, yeah, you're not going to try and stop them.
Okay, so when those guys go to a tournament, then they're expecting to basically compete at a high level, or at least compete for winning the tournament at several different games all at the same time, and probably having a really hectic schedule to juggle. Is that correct?
It can be, yeah. Best example of this is Sonic Fox, the guy everybody knows. Everybody knew him best at dominating the NetherRealm games, Injustice, Mortal Kombat, but he's also, at worst, the second best player in the world at Dragon Ball FighterZ. Goichi, the number one, they've been having a back and forth for the last couple of years. And Goichi is one of the old school legendary Street Fighter players. So there's room for movement there within all of them, especially because fighting games at their core have kind of a very fundamental skill set. Movement, spacing, the rock, paper, scissors, the wake up, knowing when to attack, when to block, knowing when not to. There are fundamentals in every fighting game, but each of them have their unique mechanics beyond what's generally called the rock, paper, scissors of fighting games.
Okay. So you mentioned Sonic Fox, you mentioned a couple other players. Who else is kind of at the top of the scene now? Which games are they dominating?
It really does depend on the game. My personal favorite game to play and watch is Tekken 7. And I would say that right now, great thing about Tekken is that it has somebody no matter where you are and where you're from. You've got Chikorin from Japan, you've got Ni from Korea, who's generally regarded as the best Tekken player of all time, and there are plenty of American players as well. Lil Majin, Cuddle Core, and the list goes on from there. And again, Arslan Ash, who is the breakout star from Pakistan in the last couple of years, that really opened up the idea that Pakistan and the Middle East has a burgeoning fighting game community, including a guy that goes by the name Tekken Master, who is actually from Bahrain. His name is Tekken Master, but he does really well in the Mortal Kombat games. So I think those would be some for Tekken. Street Fighter, I think, is the most popular one. That's one that everybody knows. You've probably seen guys like Punk, Victor Woodley, from the United States, competing. Tokido from Japan. I think that in the case of Street Fighter, the tournament scene is Street Fighter's nucleus is Japan. It is a Japanese game first and foremost. You have your outliers like Punk, like Problem X, but when it comes to Street Fighter, it is a Japanese game. You've got Daigo, you've got Tokido, you've got Fudo, Momochi, and that's really where Street Fighter is centered. It's centered in Japan. Mortal Kombat is a American game for the most part. What it really is, like with Injustice before it, it's Sonic Fox, and then there's everybody else. If you want to find somebody to root for, you can. You can even root for Foxy Grandpa, Sonic Fox's older brother. No, that's not his older brother. God, that just escapes me. It does have Fox in his name, but he's Sonic Fox's older brother, and he's one of the better players in the Mortal Kombat scene. But really, for Mortal Kombat, it's Sonic Fox and everybody else. But the game that I think is the most interesting example is Dragon Ball FighterZ. Dragon Ball FighterZ is a 3-versus-3 fighting game, And in many ways, it's kind of become the gathering of the fighting game all-stars in many ways. You'll see the previously mentioned Goichi and Sonic Fox as the top two. You'll see Chris G, one of the old Street Fighter legends from back in the day. You'll see Dogaran, who's one of the big Guilty Gear players. Blaze Blue, from the anime side of things, the quote-unquote anime fighting games. But Dragon Ball FighterZ, if you kind of want to see maybe the craziest game that has kind of taken the place of Marvel vs. Capcom of being the gathering of the fighting game all-stars, it'd probably be Dragon Ball FighterZ.
Okay, so I'm getting the sense of at least the demographics for the game, at least when it comes to nationality, that it really is turning into a much more worldwide scene than maybe League of Legends or CS:GO. Do you think there's any particular reason why that's the case with fighting games? Is there like an accessibility issue, or does it seem to lend itself better to, you know, different income ranges, or
I definitely think that there is a socioeconomic factor to this, and I think that starts with consoles. Not everybody, back in the day at least, I know for myself, this was definitely a socioeconomic thing. Back in the day, you could buy a video game console. Not everyone could get a PC to play Quake online or Unreal. Yeah. But everybody could buy a video game console and play Street Fighter 2 Turbo. That's something everybody could do. I think that has translated today, where consoles are easily accessible for everyone all over the world. I didn't even mention the fact that Latin America has a strong fighting game scene. I almost forgot to mention Latin America entirely. I do think that this is definitely one of those things that has a socioeconomic bend to it. I think that aids to the level of diversity in the fighting game community and the fact that it is a very global scene. It's extremely global. Every part of the world, whether it's Europe, whether it's the Middle East, whether it's Latin America, whether it's the United States, even through Latin America, whether it's United States, Mexico, and Canada, and including Korea and Japan. Korea has its own scene, Japan has its own scene, the United States has its own scene, Mexico has its own scene, and the rest of Latin America has their own scene, South America has its own scene. I definitely think it has to do with the fact that a video game console with your game of choice is a lot easier for everyone at just about any socioeconomic level than to have a gaming PC. You don't have to be a part of the PC master race, is what I'm saying, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. So it is, yeah, I think just to throw some numbers out there, we're talking like, even at the most expensive level for consoles, we're at like $400 to $500 for the game plus the console, and then but like upwards of $1,000 or more for a good PC, and even if the game itself that they're playing is free. So I think you're onto something there. Kaz, do you have any questions?
No.
Sorry, I had one and I forgot it, so okay. I'm trying to stall. But
also, one other thing that I was going to say along with that is that I think that fighting games, and I've said this on the main podcast, I think that fighting games have this unique universal appeal. Like, and I've said this to Kaz and VZ in the past, when I watch League of Legends, it takes a little bit to really get a grasp of what's happening on the screen visually. I've said that with other games. I've said that with League. I've said that with Overwatch. But with fighting games, it's very clear what you're seeing on the screen. It could be Street Fighter. It could be Mortal Kombat. It can be Killer Instinct.
Instinct, it could be Skullgirls, it could be any of the anime games as well. You'll see two characters on the screen on opposing sides. You'll see a green health bar for both of them, and then you'll see a timer, and then you know exactly what's going to be happening. Even if you're new to the idea, you can see that this is going to sort of be a combat sport, as it were, and you're going to watch these two characters fight until their health reaches zero. It's a very clear-cut visual representation of what you're seeing.
Yeah, also, I mean, strangely enough, I think that helps with memes as well, because I think it's not uncommon to see just random sports clips and then see, like, the health bars and other things. Those things are just kind of extremely recognizable now. I feel like that helps with melding the fighting games with the rest of sports and the rest of life in general. Whereas I don't think you're going to see the same thing for League of Legends. I think that's culturally, I feel like, you know, the different. The worldwide nature of the sport also creates kind of an interesting mix, especially that, and then the fact that a lot of these tournaments, because of the different camera angles, watching different matches going on at the same time, you wouldn't necessarily recognize it. But if you actually attend one of these, they're all occurring in the same big, you know, ballroom in the middle of a hotel. I think that plays into different things when it comes to noise and when it comes to different, sportsmanship is kind of the wrong word because everybody has a different idea of what sportsmanship is supposed to be. But I feel like fighting games is a little bit more fun when it comes to how players taunt each other and how they get into it with the crowds. There's a very wrestling feel to it in a way.
Oh yeah. And that is conscious, JBZ. It's very much by design. Again, it goes back to combat sports, and pro wrestling is a simulated combat sport. The fighting game scene rewards personality. It rewards charisma. If you have a level of on-screen presence to go with being able to play at a high level, you can go far. You can. But it really matters how well you play, too. There is a level of crowd interaction. Oh, brother, is there crowd interaction. And especially with how a lot of smaller regional tournaments can be more intimate and more up close, crowd factor is definitely something that is definitely evident, for sure.
So you saying that just made me kind of think of something. Because for both, like, League and Counter-Strike, tournament organizers have tried to find more and more and more ways to kind of entice the crowd, but at the same time keep the crowd out of the game, in a sense, right? Because the crowd, especially in League or in Counter-Strike, where you don't always know where your opponent is, like, the professionals in both games always say, like, no matter what tournament organizers try to do, like, crowd factor is always a thing. You can always hear the rumble, you can always hear it, you know, so it always is a kind of a dead giveaway when something's about to happen, whereas in fighting games, you don't have that, right? Like, there's no separate the player from the crowd thing, in a sense.
Unless you've got
headphones, they're not.
Headphones are loud. And a lot of players do wear them, but some don't. Some of them will actually, like, in a very pro-wrestling way, will feed off that crowd energy.
For the other two games, they have headphones for the game, and then they have noise dampeners to try to keep crowd out. And that's per tournament rule.
that's not a rule in the fighting game world. Definitely yeah. not.
Yeah, and
actually, I actually didn't know that.
On top of that, they've got the two competitors, and usually, at least in the early stages, they are sitting right next to each other. Sometimes, for some games, that seems that goes all the way up to the finals. They are sitting right next to each other in like two chairs. And so not only can they hear the crowd, but they can hear each other if they talk as well. Is there a lot of trash talking in the middle of a match, or do they tend to want to wait until in between rounds or matches to mouth off to each other?
It's usually right at the beginning of the match or right at the end. Because going back to the arcade scene, you're right there with that person. You're right next to them. There's no talking about them online. There's no talking about them in a chat room. You're right there, right next to them. So either you're going to be a little cliche about it, either you're going to play with honor or not, or you're going to be disrespectful. But the trash talk does happen. It definitely does, especially when there's actual animosity between players. That's rare, very rare, but it does happen. But generally, it's banter. It's not mean-spirited, usually. And a lot of these dudes, they see each other at tournaments all the time, so there's competitor friendliness as well.
Okay, so it never really escalates to the point of violence or anything like that. Have there been any notable incidents like that?
Do you have any malice at the palace in Eastwood?
Well, I mean, not even to that level, but I'm sure, like, if two people that are used to fighting each other virtually end up fighting each other physically, I'm sure that would make some sort of headlines. But I don't think I've ever heard of anything like that.
No. There are compilation videos of dudes throwing controllers and that kind of thing, and maybe some loud shouting after a game, but that's the worst of it usually, because at the end of the day, it's still a video game.
Okay, that's good to hear. How often since they are kind of mixed in with the crowd, are there incidents where the crowd ends up affecting the game in a more physical sense and not like a verbal, just like from noise?
Not really.
Are there ways that the game has to, you know, do they have rules to like restart the match if the crowd interferes like that, or?
Not to my knowledge, anything like that has ever happened. The crowd is usually there to cheer and root on their favorite player and have a good time, but it really never escalates to anything where it's really out of control. Not as far as I've seen.
Okay, I would say that's pretty impressive, because in general, you can't trust sports fans with that level of access. So I think for it to be culturally that intimate and not run into problems like that, I think that says a lot about the community and the way they conduct themselves, even if they're a little bit more free when it comes to trash talk and stuff like that.
In comparison to other esports scenes, it's definitely a bit more energetic. It's definitely a bit rowdier, but at the end of the day, the crowds are still very respectful of everyone that's up there on the stage. And generally, all the hosts and the commentators are there to do is to call the matches as they go and make sure keeping the crowds energized. Now, I don't know how this is on the other side of things, but with a lot of the bigger fighting game tournaments, they will have an in-arena commentary team, but then they'll also have a broadcast commentary team. Do the other games have that? Would they have two?
Sometimes depends on the tournament. Usually Riot, it's one and the same. They'll have their analyst desk, which is primarily for broadcast, but once the game is live, the commentators are the same commentators, but usually when the analysts are doing their thing, the commentators are still talking to the audience and the crowd and stuff like that. Some Counter-Strike tournaments have been exploring with the way things have been working recently, have been exploring letting people rebroadcast the stream and then do their own commentary. So you kind of have different online streams you could go to depending on who you like. But the in-house usually has some kind of MC, a commentary team, and an analyst desk that is for the pro production.
Yeah, so for League, the normal commentary team you hear is piped into the arena for the fans to hear. So if the players were to pull off their headphones in the middle of a match, they could hear commentary, and they could hear commentary talking about where the other team is and all that other stuff. But obviously they don't do that because they need to hear their teammates. But yeah, it's very much. I don't know if there is even a delay between that. It's done for both. But I think I get what you're kind of asking about. For fighting games, sometimes it seems like there's an in-arena announcer, and like for other sports too, like basketball and football. There's the person that's supposed to talk to the crowd. And then the person that talks more to the viewers outside of the crowd, for League it's simulcast in a way.
Okay. All right. For the fighting game scene, a lot of times the in arena broadcast team is usually a commentary team, like a regular set of commentators for the game, a commentator and an analyst, and then they'll also do the job of keeping the crowd hyped up. That's part of their job while the broadcast is going on, like in between rounds or production or whatever, while the broadcast team is talking over the match and what's happening. But generally, it's they're calling it in the arena for the arena, and the broadcast team is calling for the broadcast. That's generally how that goes. If you watch like major fighting game tournaments, you'll always hear certain commentators making sure that the crowd stays energized. And I think that adds to it. That definitely adds a factor to the fighting game tournament viewing experience, that you see people are really into this.
You mentioned like the traditional play-by-play plus color analyst setup. I would think in fighting games, is there even an opportunity for a color analyst to jump in, or is it just play-by-play the whole time? Because it seems like there wouldn't be any breathing time.
A lot of times it's back and forth, but it is fast. It's fast until it's the end of a round. The end of a match, rather. The end of a match. If they're in between matches of, say, a five-match set, that's usually where most of the commentary and analysis goes. But actually, in-game during the match, the commentator is hitting their points, and then the other person is hitting their points, and you just have to develop commentary with those people and just know when to jump in and when to jump out. And your producer, if you've got a good producer in your ear, you'll be able to build chemistry, know the timing. But it is fast, because that's just how fighting games are. They're fast, they're quick tick, twitch, and you just have to be in the moment.
I think that's all of the questions I have. Kaz, do you have any others?
Yeah, we've covered so much. I've learned things that I didn't know about fighting games.
All right, well, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode and got a little bit into why I enjoy the fighting game scene. I just think it's a very cool genre of games. So everybody out there, if you're interested, this time you can at me.
at Call Me DJM. If you're interested in the fighting game scene, let me know. We can talk about it. And I hope you enjoyed this episode. You can check out King Kaz and everything he's doing at King Kaz. Same for JVZ at JVZ. Thank you all for listening, and go to the lab and start labbing.